I'm Tom Wilmer reporting from the Great American Ballpark in the heart of downtown Cincinnati overlooking the Ohio River. Come along and join me for a most insightful conversation with Karen Forgas, the Cincinnati Reds Senior Vice President of Business Operations. We're in the stands watching the Cincinnati Reds play the San Diego Padres. And as insiders note, the game of baseball is a most social event, and the local community is among the most ardent, loyal fans of any professional team in America. Come along and join Forgas to discover fascinating insights about the backstory of the Cincinnati Reds and how the team engages with the community. They do an incredibly brilliant job incubating and nurturing the upcoming generation to become passionate, lifelong Reds fans. The team commences their engagement with kids right after they're born.
Babies, when they're born and they leave the hospital, they have an automatic free membership to the Reds Rookies Club. And then they get a free ticket to their first game that year. Mom and Dad get to parade them on the field.
And the engagement continues nonstop as they grow up. Come along and join Karen Forgas to discover the rest of the story.
This is Great American Ballpark, which, if you think about it, is probably the perfect name for a baseball park in the United States of America. The Great American Ballpark in Cincinnati, Ohio, home of the Cincinnati Reds.
Going back to right after the Civil War, oldest ball club in America.
It is, and you know, back in those days, Cincinnati was the seventh or eighth largest city. Because of the Ohio River, a lot of German immigrants came over, you know, out of Bavaria at that time. And baseball was being played as kind of a social thing. It was something people did after their day jobs, and it was people were outside because it was hot, and people would bring picnics, so it was kind of a social thing. And two really energetic entrepreneurial brothers, the Wright brothers, not the airplane Wright brothers, two other ones. One of them was really good at baseball, and one of them was a really good businessman. And he got to seeing that people gathered in scale to watch baseball. So in 1868, he posted in the big cities like New York and Boston and Philadelphia that he was going to pay for people to play baseball as their profession. So they had to come to Cincinnati, they had to try out, and he formed the first professional baseball team for 1869. Now, a couple cool things. They were contracted, and one of the things that the contract required was decorum off the field, and they also had to commit to practice. He did two genius things that made this stick. Number one, he contracted a woman who lived in the downtown area from Prussia who made costumes. He was kind of inspired by the circuses of the time, so they actually made matching uniforms with red stockings, hence they were called the Cincinnati Red Stockings, so they were in matching uniforms. But the real genius was he employed a couple riders, just like you. These riders would come travel with the Red Stockings and also advance the Red Stockings. They barnstormed in 1869 throughout all the other big cities on the East Coast. I think they went 57-0. They would come into a town for 3 days. People would come in droves to watch them play. Whoever came to watch, you know, they would challenge who's ever in the city who wanted to play them. And then, of course, like all good ideas, the minute they would leave Philadelphia, they posted up a sign they were going to field a professional team next year. So that's how baseball got started in the United States.
Right here in Cincinnati. I love it.
It's really great. So here we sit in 2024, you know, and thank you for coming to visit, because the challenge today, as you know, we still have the same finite amount of time, 24 hours in a day, and everybody's got so many things that they can do with their time. So our challenge in 2024 is to really understand where baseball fits in for people. And as you look around here tonight, you know, school's not quite out, but we still have a lot of kids. You've got date night going on. You've got some business people here because it's a business day. So we've really had to try to figure out how to put together a couple hours around a baseball game that people would come and have fun. And so it's a totally different business than it was back then. But yet the game itself is practically the same.
What's interesting is you guys have to keep the game economically viable. And to do that, you have to engage the kids. How do you do that?
We definitely have to do that. And, you know, we're one of the few teams. We have a $5 ticket still here at the Cincinnati Reds. You're also allowed to bring in your own food. You can bring in your own unopened water. So we try to make it affordable, but of course, that's a very small percentage of the people. Most people, as you see today, and really research contends it's true, is that when people post-COVID, when they're going out, they want to spend money because they want to have an experience. They want to have a good time. So then people are really taking advantage of the best seats. They're buying the best food we have, and they're coming and having fun.
Let's go to the bigger picture, looking forward and how to keep the game of baseball economically viable and some of the struggles that you go through.
Well, I won't touch too much on just the difficulties on the field itself, because you have 30 different ball clubs in Major League Baseball, and they're in 30 different cities that are all different sizes with different size populations. So that's always difficult to make sure that everybody's got good competition. But I think our team has figured out a very solid baseball model where we scout really well, we develop our players really well, so we can field a very competitive team within the economics of what our marketplace. According to Nielsen, the 30 baseball teams, we are the 29th market size. So what does that mean? That means that the possibility of who could buy tickets is a very small universe. But fortunately for the Cincinnati Reds, where we're located, within our ticket buying population within Major League Baseball, we're closer to 7th, because we have a lot of very loyal, generationally tied to the Reds cities around Cincinnati that they consider the Reds their team. So that's really what we have to continue to do, is to make sure we have an excellent fan experience. If somebody gives you the most precious commodity we all have, which is our time, you better make sure that they have fun, because with the front office, I can't control the winning and we can't control the weather. So I have to make sure that people came to the ballpark and had a good, memorable time here. So that's really what we have to work on.
Let's talk about the bigger picture, the ultimate, which is income and outgo, and where your best revenue sources are.
Well, I can tell you that the revenue sources that have the most upside for all professional organizations are ticket sales, because you tend to get a long-term contract for any of your broadcast rights or any other kinds of things tied to the leagues you're in. But your real opportunity is ticket sales, because that increases your revenue from the ticket itself. Then people, you know, buy food and beverages and merchandise while they're there. Plus, the more eyeballs that come in, the more sponsorships you can sell for the signage and the different, you know, sponsored events happening in the ballpark. So the real focus and opportunity is to make sure that the stadium is vibrant and robust. So that's a lot of our emphasis.
Your management realized that and increased the number of retail outlets immensely around the stadium.
They definitely have. You know, one of the things that the Reds, you know, we're fortunate that we have a group of owners here in Cincinnati that all have deep ties to this city. They're very loyal to it, because the Reds' economic impact is in the hundreds of millions of dollars, because we have 81 home events that attract people from up to 7 states. So we have to always be really good stewards of this organization to make sure that we're helping drive the economy in general, you know, not just to cover our bills, but to keep the whole city lifted up. And, you know, even being on a program like yours, it's just interesting, because we get to explain, because people think, yeah, I've got a Major League Baseball team near my house and they think that's all there is. But every stadium is different, you know, and every fan base is unique. And, you know, these young athletes out there, man, oh, man, these guys, they have been working hard to make it. They're living their dream in front of your very eyes. None of them are from Cincinnati, right? So even for them and their families, we work really hard to make sure that they feel welcome here in the city and their families get all the service and support they need. Because, you know, that's since the times of the gladiators, people have gathered together to see live sport. So it's just a really cool, timeless thing, and we try to be cautious about how we reinvent it, because you don't want to lose what's equitable. What's so cool in the brand equity of baseball, it's green grass. You hear the sound of the bat hit the ball, right? We're very careful when we play the music. We make sure that you hear the glove catch the pitch. You make sure you hit the bat of the ball. You know, that's kind of the brand equity of the game. So we like to preserve some of that. And it is another thing that people tend to do generationally. So we really focus on making sure before a kid gets their driver's license, we have addicted them to the Reds. We'll lose them from 15 to 24, but then they'll come back.
The kids, how do you reach out and engage with them?
We've created a couple really cool programs that are kids clubs. So the first one is Reds Rookies, and that is for babies that are born up to age 3. We work with there's a hospital chain in town that has 11,000 babies born every year. So those babies, when they're born and they leave the hospital, they have an automatic free membership to the Reds Rookies Club. And then they get a free ticket to their first game that year. Mom and dad get to parade them on the field. Mom and dad claim their future roster spot. They're going to be a shortstop. We give them a signed certificate of a contract from our manager and owner. And then they get a birthday card every year from that player who's the shortstop. And then during the season, they get an opportunity to come and get their picture taken on a player's lap like it's Santa Claus. So that's for the babies club. And then we do the Reds Heads Kids Club, which is 3 to 10 or 11-year-olds. And that's really a lot of swag. There's $30 to join. You get a backpack and a lanyard, free tickets, trading pins. And those kids, again, it's about experiences. They get invited to come to kids-only press conferences. They get to go and run the bases. They get tours of the ballpark. They get private autograph sessions. So we make sure that mom has an easy out. Moms like easy outs. Moms want to make memories. Moms plan in advance, and moms want a good value. So we kind of gear our Reds Heads Kids Club, and then we have 18,000 members in that this year alone. So it's very popular, and that's part of the way we're getting that next generation.
That's really cool. Let's talk a moment about contrast between professional football and baseball, because one is just, like somebody was saying earlier, the number of games that pro football plays per year versus baseball is head spinning.
You know, it's such a different business at the NFL is because of simply, it's really the principle of economics, supply and demand. There are 16 games in a season. We have 162. So there's a lot of demand pressure for the tickets because the supply is limited. The other cool thing for the NFL is that it is not a local sport because there's not that many teams playing games. There's 15 games a week, basically, and they can, with broadcasting, now that they're playing Thursdays through Mondays, they can slot those games so that the whole country can watch any matchup because they're not happening simultaneous. Like as you and I sit here tonight at Great American Ballpark, there are 15 other games happening simultaneously. It's not this week. They're happening in the same three-hour window, basically. So their economics, they have the opportunity. They have less games so they can get more money for their tickets and always sell out. They have a national audience who watches their games every week and then seeing all that broadcast revenue and merchandise kind of stuff. And then the league shares that money with all the individual teams so they can use that money to reinvest into their product. So it's a phenomenal business model. Baseball's is a little different because we have a lot of games, we have a lot of empty seats because we have a very long season, and again, it's more local. It's more of a local thing. So it's just different, but I would say, and this is just to brag a little, because you hear it told by people who know way more than me, the hardest thing to do in professional sports is hit a fastball, you know, or hit a baseball. So I do think we have to curate and train some of the finest athleticism and or hand-eye coordination in any sport.
Talk to us about the amount of money spent on players in both pro baseball and football is staggering.
The economics are staggering, you know, and it is really the incentive to take a young athlete to make it a career. That started back in 1869 here, you know, to make it your profession. And the stakes are very high. And depending on the league, that's what makes leagues very important, whether it's MLS, NHL, NFL, NBA, MLB, having an organizing body that tries to moderate and manage some of the competitiveness of the players to make sure that there's competitive on the field. So that's really important.
I was in Detroit with one of the heads of baseball there, and he was reiterating that baseball is probably the most social driven sport of all.
You know, I'm going to comment on that because here's what I say about it. Because we have in Cincinnati, we're fortunate to have a football team, the Bengals, and we have a soccer team, FC Cincinnati. So I have tickets to both. So when I go to the NFL game, I am geared up and I go early. I'm in the parking lot eating and drinking, you know, and whatever. Then you get into the game and you're in your section and everybody in your section, you are in it together. You are all standing up. You are all chanting. You're hitting high fives. You're yelling at the coach together. Then you go to an MLS game here, FC Cincinnati. The crowd there, when you're a fan there, you are there. You're wearing a scarf. You know, soccer fans wear scarves, and they stand up, too. And you are a unit with your whole section, but you're swaying and singing. You're like a choir. So in the NFL game, I'm in a mob. The MLS game, I'm in a choir. But when you come to a baseball game, people come in twos, threes, fives. You don't really come in here wanting to stand with your whole section. You don't really want to talk to anybody else. You're just with your little insular group. And the pace of the game is such that you get up and leave your seat. You walk around. You would never do that in an NFL game. You would never leave your seat. Or even a hockey game. You know, you don't leave. So this is very much built on companionship. And you just get a night to sit outside on a summer night and, you know, with the people that you love or whoever you invited. And like tonight, we've all gotten to kind of know each other, and it's been really fun.
Like right now, you know, the Padres on the field and home team, and yet the ball is not in play. So we're able to carry on a conversation.
Exactly, and that's where like our sponsorships come in handy, because we've got to keep people entertained in between the innings. And again, that's what makes us, we're not really like an NBA. When you can put on a sporting event in an arena, then you almost have Broadway theatrics at your disposal with lights and smoke and things dropping out of the ceiling. But in a baseball stadium, very few have a top. So you're right. We really, in between innings, the most I can do is turn up the music and flicker my lights. So it's really got to be something with fan cam hosts or silly games that they can play or great music or even an organist. Yes, we have an organist still. It's part of the brand.
Just up visiting him and he's got a classic Hammond organ.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it? Yeah.
Talk to us a little bit more about the kids. A lot of the minor league teams I've been to, they have like splash pools and whatnot. Talk to us about what you have here for the kids.
Yeah, we try to, and from the fan experience point of view, even the Savannah Bananas, which you know are a phenomena, traveling the United States with the theatrics of minor league baseball. Minor league baseball definitely has more of an incentive. Those ballparks are anywhere from 6,000 to 10,000 people, and so they have a lot more opportunity to make it very relaxed because the stakes aren't as high. But if somebody is going to a professional sporting, like at the top tier, we're at the major league here, they expect it to be more of a major league experience. They don't want it to be too slapsticky. They want it to be serious but with an edge of entertainment to it, whereas minor leagues, they want it to be entertaining, silly, free, fun. I mean, I've seen some, we've got affiliates, we have a double A team, an A team, and a triple A team, and we are very familiar with the things that they do for crowd engagement. they're perfect for those affiliates, but they probably are not what we would do at the major league level.
But yet you still do a great job of engaging with the kids.
We actually have a couple things. I laughingly said that the person who runs our business operation, we call him the director of shenanigans because he always invents the next best thing. And we have a thing that's the only one in the world called Redzilla. And it is basically a tripped up golf cart that we have that comes out of center field. But you know, we've got these CO2 cannons, three of them that fire, you know, the balls. But the difference is ours has so much pent up CO2 that we actually fire the balls to the top row of the view. So that thing circles around during the fourth inning. And I literally every game, I watch it with a smile on my face because I don't watch the fans who are in shock because it goes up so high, but I watch all of our ball players who turn into 8-year-old little boys. They all run to the rail to watch this thing. It's the funniest thing. That's good. This is our closer who's just come in, and he just did a very good job getting a strike.
All right. Well, let's go back watching the ball game. But before we go, tell us where to go to learn more about your world.
It's always the best place to start is go to Reds.com. It's pretty straightforward. And when you get on Reds.com, they can take you to anything from about the ballpark, the players, or how to come and be at a game. We just won a game. I think I need you to come back. You're a good luck charm.
You're happy, huh? I love it.
There's Redzilla. There's Redzilla right there. See, look at the balls. They're going all the way up. See them all up in the sky. My name's Karen Forgas, and I am the Chief Communications and Community Officer for the Cincinnati Reds.
I love it. And I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from Cincinnati, Ohio. I love it.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, iTunes, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer. Please support your local NPR station. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. If I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.